We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a crisis in our veteran community, and it didn't just start overnight. It's been going on for many, many decades, and where we see it manifested today, in that there are over 50,000 vets who are homeless, and every day in America, at a rate of about 20 a day, a vet commits suicide. If this isn't a crisis, I don't know what is. It's totally insane. My guest today is Gretchen Smith. Gretchen served in the Air Force. She's the founder of CODA Vets, and she's an expert on veteran issues. She's passionate, patriotic. She literally bleeds red, white, and blue, and I've also heard some Tennessee orange. She's well known nationally, and it's a distinct honor to have her here on America Out Loud. Welcome, Gretchen.
Thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. You know, I'm gonna tee this up. I'm gonna take out my driver, my Big Bertha. How is it possible that our politicians have let this get so far out of hand?
That is the million-dollar question, Ray. That's the question I would like to have answered to by DC. What we're looking at is a crisis in the veteran community. As I continue to move forward and we grow with CODA Vets, our issues that we are coming across are becoming more and more complex. And as you said, we lose roughly 20 brothers and sisters in arms a day, and that is a true crisis. I don't understand or have an explanation as to why our politicians do not see this as a valid crisis. They do not speak about our veterans on a regular basis, I'm finding. I talk about our issues every day. I put individual crisis and needs out every day. And I am looking to a point to where DC is going to start taking notice. The mainstream media, they have some responsibility in this as well. We get to see story after story after story, time and time again, of illegal immigrants, the caravans, the wall, and all of that is incredibly important in our nation. And those are issues that we need to address. But on the flip side of that, our American heroes who have served, who have worn the uniform, put those boots on for us every day and carried out that oath, they are in dire need of help. Our stories matter. They need to be shared from sea to shining sea. There needs to be a daily spotlight on the veteran community as well. There is enough room in the media for them to share some of that spotlight with illegal immigrants, with our American heroes. And that it fires me up beyond belief. There are no words to describe how that makes me feel. And I redirect back to our politicians. They need to also spend just as much time on advocating for the American heroes as they are why they're against building this wall, or why they feel like the illegal immigrants do have a place in our nation and should be here, and why our tax dollars are being spent on them. So I feel like there's no rational explanation as to why our veteran community is set to the side. And there's so much attention on all of these other issues. It blows my mind. And so I have literally made it my mission to fire up our nation, with dignity and respect and with love, and show them who our veterans are. I'm putting faces and names, yes, to the veteran, and what does that mean? And as I share each crisis or need, I'm hoping that it's, that we're moving further and further out there and grow and we continue to grow in order to get the attention of the politicians to say, hey, we're here. Our lives matter. Our stories matter too.
It's like they've been kicking the can down the road, making it somebody else's problem. And when is somebody going to stop the can? I mean, it drives me crazy that the politicians cannot allocate resources to this problem. Yet, as you say so eloquently, we glamorize illegal aliens right now. And they all get behind it. The whole progressive left gets behind this notion that an illegal immigrant should come first before the women and men who served our country, it drives me crazy. It's like, hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. It's like the three monkeys. And it drives me crazy. So how do we, you know, what would you say the biggest problems that are facing the veteran community right now?
Well, of course, you know, the suicide rate is huge in our community. It is a crisis. And when I've talked about it with countless veterans across the nation, and it's something that everyone is vested in, we have a heart for. I was, you know, speaking with an Army Ranger a couple of days ago who was heading to a young Marine's gravesite to bury him. He had committed suicide, and there's just countless stories I could share, you know, with this particular issue. There's so many that, you know, we could spend two or three or four shows talking about veterans issues, but I definitely believe that suicide is number one. Mm-hmm. We, you know, our homeless and at risk for becoming homeless is another huge issue. And I think a large part of that plays into when our military, when they transition from serving back to the civilian life, if they do not have a solid support system in place via family and the community that they grew up in, you know, if they don't have family, if they just or theirs is dysfunctional, that's when you run into issues with transition, because it takes a family, you know, people that care about you to help you make that move from military to civilian life. It's a culture shock. You're mm-hmm. going back to something that, you know, you haven't been involved with in many, many years. And I know I struggled with that. I served one tour of duty, and it took me time to reacclimate myself. But I did, you know, I did have a family support system in place. So jobs, you know, being able to find a job when you come out of the service is huge. It's difficult to translate your skill set, your military skill set, back to civilian life. And mm-hmm. I know many of our veterans struggle with that, and we've actually been assisting with them in that particular area as well. We need to have mechanisms put in place for when our veterans do get out. They do have to attend classes before they're discharged. However, the classes are antiquated. They haven't kept up with society, with technology. And so when you come out, we've got veterans that have served 15, 20, 30 years, and they're like, they literally will tell us.
Well, why are they antiquated? Is it the problem of the military, or is it the resources that are available when they get back to the mainland?
Not updating the classes to keep up with technology and how jobs are, you know, being filled nowadays, or keywords that employers are now looking for. You know, their resumes are not quite up to speed the way they should be. That, you know, there's just so many different things we could take a look at when it comes to them transitioning. Those classes they're old. The information they're disseminating now is, you know, it's no longer current and valid. So they really need to take a close look at that. I've heard from countless veterans, you know, Gretchen, I am not prepared. You know, I am now out in the world trying to find my way, and I'm literally not prepared for the world. So I think they do a phenomenal job of ingraining us, and you know, they tear you down and build you back up as a team. That, you know, they remove the individual and you become a team when you go through boot camp. And I love the process that I went through, because it works. It's successful. But when you leave the military, there needs to be something similar that happens in order for you to be successful in life again. Now, and I feel like we're lacking.
Let me ask you. Now, for example, I know, for example, my father, when he came back from World War II, there was mm-hmm. something called the GI Bill.
Right.
Does that still exist? Are there remnants of the GI Bill that can be re-educated?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. The GI Bill is still, I utilize the GI Bill, and it still is available today. I know they have made some updates to it. Yes, absolutely. However, not everybody, you know, is cut out to go to college. You know, that's not everybody's path. We're all different. You know, we're uniquely made, and that's okay. So I just, and we do have a lot of veterans who will come out and use their GI Bill, just like my husband and I. Okay. We definitely took advantage of that. But though, for those of who don't want to go to college or don't have the aptitude for that, you know, we need to make sure that, again, there's mechanisms in place where they can go
get them into the trades.
Assistance, into the trades, or also get assistance with their resume in order to ensure their skill set is translated so that it can be utilized. There's got to be keywords, you know, so that they can be utilized here in the civilian world, because the military and civilian world are so different from each other. It's, you know, the military is incredibly unique. So we just want to make sure that, you know, the skills and the training that our veterans get from their service, they can actually, you know, translate that over when they're looking for a job. And it can be done. It can be done. But in, you know, but in many instances, it's not. So that's something we could really focus on and make some improvements in that particular area.
What are their greatest frustrations?
Their greatest frustrations are when they come out is they don't fit in. They don't belong. I'm not one of you. They feel isolated. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about a particular combat vet in mine. He lives up in Beaver Meadows, Pennsylvania area. And I had that conversation with him two or three times. You know, he's a retired Army, and said, "Gretchen, I don't fit in." He's like, "You know, I'm a loner. I just don't, there's just something about me that's different now. And people don't know how to interact with me at work." So he does feel isolated. And I've heard that from so many different veterans, that they feel, you know, they don't feel quite accepted. They feel different and they're treated different, especially if they have PTSD. Yes. People sometimes can't relate to that. And there are triggers. And I feel like if we take the time to educate ourselves and talk to each other about it, because these guys, they're the reasons why we have our freedoms.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, we can take a little bit of our time to learn about who they are, what they've been through, and what PTSD is. And, you know, that way we can adjust with them and work with them. And I feel like it's on us to educate, you know, our nation on what it's like to be a veteran, on, you know, what does it feel like on a day-to-day basis to walk that path?
Well, I always felt that there is a stigma.
Yes.
We politicized this, because getting back to the politics of it, is we know that there's a VA. It's the largest integrated health system in the country, right? They serve upwards of 20 million. Now, I don't know the utilization rate. You'd know better than I.
Nine million. They serve 9 million veterans.
9 million out of 20 million.
Yes.
So it's less than 50% are actually even utilizing the resources of the VA. So then there's no other resources, right? I mean, they can't go to the VA for housing, can they? Can they put in a claim for, you know, they need down payment for a rent, or does it on you?
No, the VA does not, that, you know, they're not there to give you security deposit or first month's, last month's rent. They do not have, you know, programs for that. But they, I mean, there are homeless service offices in place at the VA that will provide some assistance. However, the issue with that is there's layers upon layers within
a bureaucracy.
Yeah. And it's the waiting list and the application process, and you've got to wait your turn. And so that I literally have found that Code of Vets, I believe why we've become so successful so quickly is we have found a niche that we are filling in a gap for many, many veterans across the nation, that when they need immediate assistance, they're starting to come to us, because we can turn to our nation, to our brothers and sisters in arms in our community, and say, look, we've got this veteran in crisis. They need X amount of dollars. It's going to cover, you know, just what I said, the VA won't cover is security deposit, first, last month's rent. We need to raise this right now to ensure this veteran does not become homeless.
But doesn't it come down to resources? Because look at what happens on the flip side, as we started out the conversation. If an illegal alien steps one foot in this country, they get housing, they get medical, they get legal advice, they get, you know, resources from cradle to grave, a child or an adult.
Right.
Why do they get resources
exactly.
And somebody who served our country can't get? This comes back to the political issue. I gotta thank and put a little kudo in for President Trump, because I really believe that while the can has been kicked down the road so long, he finally put his foot down and created some accountability, right?
Yes.
Maybe there has to be a move to get those resources that are the gap items back on the table in our Congress. We can't even get $5 billion to build a wall.
And right, but sure, we sure can find the money to take care of our illegals and the refugees, which is absolutely absurd when we have so many of our own American citizens who are struggling in poverty and homeless. And, you know, and that setting aside the veterans in need, why aren't we taking care of our own first? Number one, the illegal immigrants shouldn't even be here. It burns me up. Mm-hmm. You know, illegal, that's, you know, equals criminal in my mind. If you've circumvented the system in any way to enter our country and you didn't wait your turn, you didn't follow the process, the immigration progress, you should not be here. That's how I feel about it. So why are we allocating all of our taxpayers' dollars towards them and taking care of them once they are here, and refugees flooding in, you know, we're taking care of them, but our veterans are struggling. We sent a veteran 2 weeks ago $200 for groceries because he hadn't eaten in 4 days. Oh, he was literally living on broth, we found out.
I can't.
That is absurd. We should never have that going on in our country, Ray. We are a country of wealth. We have more than enough resources in our nation, but I have countless stories of something similar to that time and time again of what we're coming across with our veteran community. And it's sad. It's for me, I'm fired up. Yeah. You know, it's not.
Can you handle it though? Can you handle it?
Absolutely. Okay, we are swamped.
What else can we do? What are some of the other solutions that we can bring to the table? Do we have to march on Washington for vets?
I would love to have a rally for veterans because you know what? Our service matters. Our stories matter. I just feel like we have brought so much to this country. And, you know, we are the reason why we have the freedoms we have. We're the reason we have a secure and beautiful nation because of the uniforms that we've put on. If you did not have veterans, you would not have a United States of America. I feel like we owe so much more and we could do such a better job for these men and women, and why we are not, why I cannot think of one rational reason why we should have a hungry veteran, a veteran, you know, that doesn't hardly have any clothes. We had a veteran who was on the streets who was literally selling the boots off of his feet for food. It's just absolutely absurd how have we arrived here? And I truly believe politics plays a pivotal role in this.
I think it's come down to politics completely. As I said, they've been kicking the can down the road and they've had ample time. Yeah, you almost have to be an idiot not to see it, literally. I mean, it's as plain as we see it every day driving down the street. You come to a stoplight, you know, odds are that's a veteran, you know, and then there are the veterans that just kind of don't want to bring attention to themselves, but they're dying inside.
Right.
And they're alone. And it's not so much even the money or the food or the clothes. It's the understanding. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Our veterans feel isolated. They feel like they've been set to the side. You know, they feel like once their service is over, that they are a number. That's it. You know, they're no longer useful to our nation. But the way they're treated, that it just kind of reinforces those feelings. I don't believe it's intentional by most people. I think most people do honor and love our veterans. However, I believe it's a systemic problem. We have got to take a real look at our system. I truly believe what we're doing at the grassroots level, Ray, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not an expert. I'm not a professional. Okay. Literally, I'm doing this to honor my dad. I'm a veteran. My husband's a veteran. And I'm learning as I go. And what I'm finding is that we are the solution. We are taking on a veteran at a time. We're figuring out local solutions for each particular veteran. And when I look at the VA and what they're doing and how, you know, there are some improvements there, yes, but it's such a huge bureaucratic machine. It's never going to be perfect. I don't think it's ever going to be truly efficient. There's so many gaps in the system. It's unbelievable because we're actually finding quite a few of them because we're getting those veterans that are falling through those cracks. I just feel like we are the solution. If the VA at the DC level, at the executive level, would partner with us, if we could open up a line of communication, there's such a disconnect between us veterans down here at the grassroots level, the ones who actually use the services, and between us and them, the ones who are actually creating policy. If there was that direct line, I think we could find some solutions together. I don't think we should ever be us versus them.
No.
It should be we're all on the same path. We've all got the same mission, and that's to take care of our own, you know?
Well, on that note, hold that thought. We're just going to take a quick break.
Patriots. Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we're back with Gretchen. Gretchen, I want to step back a second and just tell you a little about my own background. I was in high school during the Vietnam War, and I understand that the highest percentage of veterans come from that era. And some came back, and it was a crying shame. So many died in my age group. I was fortunate in the sense that I did have a deferment. Deferment was allowable. A lot of the left kicks around deferment as if it were a curse or, you know, a shame. Or I don't know. It happens. And I went through a guilt that I've carried for a long time, that so many died and I wasn't there with my brethren. So I wrote a cathartic poem a few years ago titled Baby Boomer Amends. It's been about 50 years since the offensive named Tet, but the only offense was never honoring these vets. We protested this war, one never declared. 50,000 daughters and sons, their deathly burden to bear. We mourn for the soldiers who never came back, yet abandoned survivors when they undid their pack. Some without limbs, bodies abused, chemically altered, Agent Orange infused. The courageous came home to a shameful disgrace. Some were offered a job, but most spat in the face. We worry more about climate and fresh water to keep than finding a home for a vet on the street, haunted by memories, mentally and physically harmed. Suicides rampant, yet no one's alarmed. It's never too late helping those in despair. It takes more than a pill or a psychiatrist's chair. Let's start with a hug for the love that was lost. Fix the VA, no matter the cost. It's time we pay homage to the last of these men. And the irony of all is that they'd gladly do it again. You know, Gretchen, where does your passion come from?
Well, you know, that's a beautiful poem, and you know, the inspiration for Code of Vets is my dad. He served two tours in Vietnam, and he just came back a man changed forever. He told me in one conversation, and he said, "I lost my humanity in the jungle. I came back with a piece of my soul missing."
Mm-hmm.
And just speaking of the very ending of your poem, it really touched me because my dad, you know, when he was on his deathbed. And I, you know, I'd asked him if he'd had any grits, and we were talking about, you know, the war, because it had such an impact on his life. He had a very troubled life after the war. And he told me, he looked at me, you know, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, "Gretchen, I wouldn't change a thing. I would have done it all over again." He was so incredibly patriotic. He loved Old Glory. I'd never seen such reverence when I saw him handling that flag. And that's how I have, you know, he ingrained that patriotism in me, and that's how I became so patriotic, is watching my dad growing up and the respect that he had for our nation and the flag. And when he'd see his brothers in arms, he just, there would be this look in his eye. He would change, and he had such love and honor for them. And he would, you know, just touch their shoulder and put his arm all around them and say, "Hey, brother, how you doing? You know, where'd you serve?" And, you know, they'd start talking about their MOSs and, you know, just have that.
What is, you know, an MOS?
What you did in the military. I was security police. My dad was infantry. So, you know, they would start talking, and it just would be, you know, an intimate moment between these two brothers in arms. And for me, that made an incredible impact on my heart, and I carried that with me always. And, you know, my dad is the inspiration of Code of Vets. I lost my dad with his battle to PTSD roughly 5 years before he died. I sat down with him and had a conversation with him, and I was, you know, just said, "Dad, what are you doing?" You know, he was, you know, self-medicating, drinking, taking the pills the VA was giving him too much. He was taking too much of them. And he said, "Gretchen," he said, "I can't do it anymore. You know, it's, I'm done. You know, they've beat me." And he was talking about the demons of war. He said, "I can't get the faces out of my head."
It's like flashbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Nightmares, flashbacks, yes. So he said, "Out of respect for you kids, I will not put a gun to my head. But you see that bottle sitting right there? It's going to do the exact same thing." And those were his words. And they were words I carry forever. I'll never forget that conversation. And roughly, again, 5 years later, my dad passed, and he had meant it. There was no helping him. He did not get the assistance he needed to deal with the demons of war, and they are very destructive if you try to deal with them on your own. And I learned that the hard way with my dad.
You know, what you're saying, it brings to mind a couple of things. One is groups. You know, not quite like an Alcoholics Anonymous or a 12-step process, but to be able to sit with your brethren, because a lot of it goes unspoken, correct?
Yes.
I mean, my father was a POW at the end of the war in Germany, and he really never spoke about it for years and years and years. And finally, we convinced him to write, and I have, you know, a plastic envelope, not, you know, like a Ziploc bag, a giant Ziploc bag full of his notes in his hand. And he passed in 1999. It's been 20 years. And I just don't know what to do with it, because he never spoke about it. But everything I really need to know about it is right there. I'm almost afraid to touch it. And he always felt that coming back from the war where so many of his brothers died, he, God rest his soul, felt that it was a bonus, his life. And he was able to deal with it. But so many people bury it, don't they?
Right. Yes, absolutely. They bury it. They don't talk about it. And I know back, you know, in the 70s and the era of the Vietnam War, that's what they were told by the VA, that it was something called shell shock, to suck it up and be a man, to shove it way down deep and never speak of it again. And I know they've made great strides since then. They don't do that any longer. But that's what happened with the Vietnam veterans. And many of them took that to heart. My dad was a good soldier. He followed orders. And that's what he did. He shoved it way down deep. But what it did was it ate away at him like a cancer slowly. Mm. Until it finally took his life, and it broke him. He could not carry it any longer. So I really do believe that we are the solution for each other. There is no magic pill. There is no cure for PTSD. But when we walk together and we share that load with each other, it makes the load manageable. And that's what's so important when I talk with our veterans, our brothers,
that's a great
sisters
point.
In arms, is you great do point. Not have to walk that path alone. You know, let us walk with you through this. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to share every single bloody, gory detail. Right. What that means is that they know they have somebody there that they can share what they feel comfortable with, because some things are between them and God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they may not want to share every single detail. And that's okay, because we are all geared differently. But the point is they know that somebody's there with them that understands it, that gets it, that has been there. And that's so, I think it's so critical, especially with our combat vets who have walked that journey and been through hell. You know, hell, war is hell. It literally is hell. And to know that you're there with, you know, with a brother in arms who's been there and done that, and they feel like they're understood. So I feel like that truly is a huge part of the puzzle for our community, is to start coming together in historic numbers, finding each other and being there for each other. And I think that's what the solution is, mm-hmm. is, you know, talking about it, walking together, you know, doing things together, finding that brotherhood and camaraderie that you get in the military. If we can find that and create that out here in the civilian world, oh my gosh, I think we're together, we're unstoppable. We can decrease that number of 20, mm-hmm. You know, down to a much lower level. I don't know what that would be, but, you know, even one would be worth it.
Of course.
So,
Are you seeing any difference in the reactions based on the time that they served? Because it was Korea, Vietnam, then the Second World War. There aren't many left, are there? There may be I don't know the numbers, but you had, are you seeing different levels of need based on when they served up until like the current, let's say Gulf, you know, the Gulf Wars and, you know, all Iraqi freedom and all the current things that are going on in Syria and Afghanistan?
Well, PTSD pretty much impacts the veterans across the board, regardless of, you know, which war they served. I mm-hmm. do know that. However, as you age, of course, you're going to have different problems that come with that. You know, when you get older, your body starts breaking down. So, you know, our Vietnam, our Korea veterans are having, you know, issues of growing older. And, you know, it's their life, you know, final phase of life, the golden years, whereas our younger veterans who are coming out of the, you know, the Gulf War, and Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Iraq, Afghanistan, those, you know, they're a younger group. They have their own particular, you know, they're raising their families along with their PTSD, which, of course, the veteran, you know, the veterans back in Vietnam, you know, they struggle with that too, raising their family. So they're just on a, you know, they may be on different courses, but they're walking similar paths. And it is important to note, though, war is different, you know, because there's a difference in a jungle war versus, you know, what's going on over in the desert these yes. past 17 years, you know, so they have different experiences with war that they bring to the table. So I found that that's, you know, an interesting piece of it too.
Now, I know that on a percentage basis, at least the statistics, the data that I read, 90% of the veterans are male and about 10% are female. What are we seeing? Where are we seeing the same problems with the females? And what are their specific needs?
Right. I'm actually working with a two-tour combat veteran right now. Actually, she's in my town, served over in Iraq. One of her tours was 15 months, has a TBI, has a pretty serious head injury. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with her quite closely. And what I've seen with her is that it's quite similar to the male counterpart, to the male veterans. She struggles with, you know, PTSD. She's been diagnosed with her TBI. You know, and she struggles with, you know, she's got a new job, but she struggles with her cognitive level.
That's a traumatic, a TBI, just to stop, is a traumatic brain injury?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it impacts her cognitive ability, and her reflexes are not quite as quick as they used to be. So she, you know, all of our veterans who struggle with those type of injuries, it's similar for men and women. So I'm finding that with her, you know, I'm dealing with the same things as I would a male veteran. Mm-hmm. So she started a new job, but she's really struggling because she's being timed during the probation piece of it because it's a plant, you know, there's a time limit as to, you know, how quickly you can finish each task. Mm-hmm. She struggles with that because she has TBI. I don't know if this job is going to be a good fit for her. We'll find out after the 90 days are up. But it's really interesting to walk with her through this journey because this is the first time I've been able to do it in person because I'm social media across the nation. And so I'm dealing with these guys mainly on the phone and text, email, DMs, that sort of thing. But with her, I'm in person, mm-hmm. you know, and I get to see this happening up close and personal. And so it gives me a little bit of a different experience. But I have not seen a huge difference with her and the male counterparts that okay. I've encountered. PTSD is PTSD.
There you go.
Now, yeah, exactly. And
I have a just a question or two before we take another break. And I want to talk about the other family members. We can't ignore, you know, the family of a military person is affected too, correct?
Absolutely.
And we lose sight of this. Are we seeing issues that cause family issues, abuse, strained relationships, divorces? I mean, there's a lot going on here, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it absolutely puts a tremendous strain on the family with deployments. And then, you know, that transition back to civilian life not only does it impact the veteran, but the family as well, because that's the only lifestyle they've known. And you feel like you're losing part of your family when you make that transition back to the civilian world. So, it impacts the kids. Some of the kids have to go through therapy, counseling. The divorce rate is staggering in the military and in the vet community. Mm-hmm. But there's just so many stressors that come along with serving and with putting that uniform on. And that's why I feel like it's important for us to have these daily discussions about it, because our nation needs to be aware of it. And I feel like we need to step up and walk with our veteran community, because we need to let them know that, you know what you did mattered. Your service matters, and we honor that. How can we support you? What can we do for the family unit to provide assistance? And I think that's another area that we need to be discussing and improving upon, because there are so many families that are broken apart due to PTSD. Because veterans tend to isolate themselves. They tend to become estranged from their family because they feel like they've hurt them enough. Uh-huh. And they know if they stay there, they'll continue to harm them, either physically or emotionally or mental or all of the above. And so I have come across countless veterans who live like hermits, have isolated themselves.
I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
I have a very dear, my closest friend, it has PTSD. And he hasn't opened his curtains mm-hmm. in several years.
Right.
I mean, think about that. Just the darkness and then the worthlessness, that what they did wasn't worth it, what you were saying before, really hit home for me. You start combining these things, and they just have no reason to live. There are demons. This is serious. And it's like the government, the politicians, you know, they served and then they just, that's it. It's not just about going to the doctor at the VA. They think that's where their responsibility ends. Our whole discussion is that's not where it ends. That's where it begins.
Right.
It's backwards.
Right. Exactly. Right. They're acting like they're done with them, and they're not. It's truly the beginning of their journey.
Well, on that note, we're just going to take a break. Stay with us, folks.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Gretchen, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, we know each other on Twitter, correct? That's where we first got introduced.
Yes.
I was like in awe of watching you and looking at you on your videos or podcasts or Periscopes. I'm not sure what they were, but you are just you have a magnetism that we feel out here. And I just want to compliment you on that. Have you been suppressed? Have you had issues of censorship on Twitter or Facebook?
Absolutely. With 100%, without a doubt, my Twitter account is horrifically suppressed, throttled, censored, all of the above, however you want to frame it. There are times when I've been shadow banned. That I know that I get caught up in these different algorithms. You know, if you have specific keywords that they're looking for, if they're in your tweets, that they do not go anywhere, or you're literally like in this cycle of perhaps only a certain amount of conservatives will be able to see you. And I've had countless veterans tell me they have to come to my page in order to see my tweets. They do not see, and I'm on literally Code of Vests is a social media organization. That's how we're able to get things done. And it's just so frustrating for me to hear this. You know, I was locked out of my account recently from Thursday night until Sunday of last week. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of pressing issues going on because we've grown so quickly and so fast. You know, I'm trying to, chase Code of Vets. It's outgrown me, which is it's a beautiful thing. But I don't have time for those type of games. I do not have time for censorship. What we're doing is we're dealing with life and death issues every day. We're dealing with crisis after crisis, need after need, you know, veterans in different situations. And we need access to the Code of Vets account at all times. And for me, it's unacceptable when I'm locked out for no reason, you know, and I just feel like they are
literally
targeting. It's incredibly the same thing. Politicized.
They've taken the same issue that was struggling in Washington, D.C., and they're putting it on social networks. This is the same fight. See, people don't realize that everything that's happening is connected, whether it's the border, you know, whether it's the Green New Deal, whether it's the same problem. We have social media doing the same thing to you. And they fought for us as Americans, correct? A veterans issue should not be a partisan issue. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what burns me up is I help veterans. I don't care what their political stance is. It does not matter to me. I do not ask them. It's really none of my business, and I don't want to know. Whenever a veteran comes to me for assistance, I help. We vet them, and once we know the issue is valid, we jump on it, and we don't ask what's your political party. So that's why it's really concerning that Twitter is, you know, taking such a strong interest with Code of Vets and a strong stance against us, because I am a conservative voice as well. However, I do it with dignity and respect, and I do have a right to my opinion. I have served, you know, to protect that right, you know, for our freedoms. And one of those include freedom of speech.
Yes. That's the whole point. If you say something like, an illegal immigrant, just those two words, illegal immigrant, it's going to create a shadow ban. Trying to make
that's
the point.
The trigger words.
You're trying to make the point, aren't you, of the hypocrisy and this dastardly comparison. They glamorize an illegal alien over the men and women who wear that uniform, but because they have words, you're just expressing an opinion and a valid point, and for expressing the truth, you get shadow banned, censored, and it's a miracle you're even left on Twitter.
Right.
I don't know what happened to Facebook. Do you have any issues with Facebook?
I do use Facebook, but not to the extent that I use Twitter. I did have one issue with Facebook where I had to remove a Facebook post. That they would not allow on, but primarily I utilize Twitter as my main source of getting information out there. I think I've had a little bit of trouble with Instagram with a couple of the posts, but most of the censorship, and again, because I don't use it as much as I do Twitter, I'm on Twitter constantly. That's where my base of 155,000 veterans are. So that's, that's where I do most of my work. I put out our needs there on that particular platform. And I tell you what, it has been a fight day one.
What's your typical day like?
Oh gosh, we serve veterans all day, every day. I know that I was asking my professional advocate that has come aboard and has partnered with me. And I was asking her about that. In 1 week, she had counted that we had helped 81 veterans between the two of us.
God bless you.
So we literally wake up, you know, and we check our messages, you know, voicemails to see, you know, what veterans, you know, are in need. You know, one of the latest veterans we're working with is he had a house fire. And now him and his family, he's got two small children, 3 and 6, and they're living in a barn.
Oh, no.
So we wake up to different scenarios, and they're complex issues. They're not easy to solve. Just like with them living in a barn, this is a huge undertaking for us. They had no, you know, homeowners insurance, so they literally are starting from scratch. And of course, we're going to walk with them through this journey. But this is what we deal with every day, Ray.
Well, you know, I think about like the Red Cross as an example. You know, they tend to mobilize these large emergencies, and they get their money all year round, and they allocate it on emergencies. You don't have that luxury of time.
No.
You have to react quickly.
Yes.
And this is now the tell us about Code of Vets. Technically, what it is, you know, is it a 501c3 trust, a nonprofit? Help us understand what it is.
It is a nonprofit. We are in the process of becoming a 501c3. It takes time. We have not been around long enough to be approved for that status. We're working towards it. But we are a nonprofit. And what we do is when we find veterans in distress or in crisis or need, we vet them. We require military documentation. And once that's done, and Dr. Cindy Walter, she's our advocate, runs a background check on them to make sure they're not, you know, criminal, they don't have long criminal histories. We go ahead and run with whatever the issue is. And we can do a quick turnaround. Just for instance, the 6 veterans that were living under a bridge in cardboard boxes in Mingo County, West Virginia, mm-hmm. we were able to extract them from the bridge and get them into 2 apartments within a 48-hour period. Talk about quick turnaround.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's miraculous what we're accomplishing. It's absolutely, and it's teamwork. It's just not one person. It's the community steps up and gets involved. We get involved, and between all of us, we're able to solve those particular issues. And I'm telling you what, it's effective. And I don't see anybody doing exactly what Code of Vets is doing, and I'm fired up about it because it works.
Can you set up locations nationally if you had the funding? How do we create multiple Gretchen Smiths? You're only one person, Gretchen.
Exactly. So people ask, you know, how can you scale this? How are you going to grow
this? Scale
it
up.
Yeah, exactly. And so my vision, my dream is to have Code of Vets teams in every state.
Okay.
So that we will be able to address any veterans issue at any given time in the manner we do. As we grow, we have to make sure that we're staying true to the grassroots mission and heart of Code of Vets. I do not want to turn into some huge Wounded Warriors program. I literally want to keep it on a smaller scale because we got to keep it grassroots or we'll lose the very heart of what Code of Vets is. And I think we can do that with, you know, small teams in every state so that we can tackle these issues together. And again, when the communities find out about, you know, what these veterans, the circumstances they're living under, they respond quickly and beautifully and appropriately. So the sky's the limit. Together, we're unstoppable. Code of Vets has such unlimited potential. It's such a new way of looking at how to, you know, help and assist veterans not just in a timely manner, but in a crisis, in crisis intervention, like immediate manner.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so exciting about it. And I've found a way to assist, and it's working. It's powerful.
Just
so I'm excited about it.
Are you seeing that the major cities are where we're seeing the problems? San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Miami. Are there cities that are specifically problem areas for vets where they're stuck?
I just want to say, you know, California in general, like Los Angeles, San Diego, they have large groups of homeless veterans. And I think there's almost 11,000 veterans in California alone. I believe they're leading the charge in, you know, the homeless statistics, which is not a great, you know, place to be leading the charge. So
that's
definitely an issue.
They'll give sanctuary to an illegal alien.
But they're not taking care of the veterans. Yeah, absolutely. So that, you know, that's a huge troubled issue right there. And, you know, there's pockets throughout the nation. So really, again, I think the key is for us to be able to build these teams in every state to be able to address whatever the issues are in that particular state. And, you know, it's on us. I think we need to stop looking to the government for solutions and to take care of us. And it's time for us to take care of our own. And that's what we're doing. I mean, we're literally starting to take care of our own one veteran at a time. And the goal is to, you know, move that towards thousands, you know, taking care of thousands of our own. And it is possible. It's actually doable. And we have the momentum. We're getting some great backers. There are some really, you know, individual
donors.
There are some bigger individuals. Well, they're looking at us. As soon as we get our, you know, selves organized and structured, we're working on a business plan. We're working on our board of directors. We've got our bylaws in place now. So once we get all of that in place and set in stone, and we're creating a ever-growing team of Code of Vets, the, you know, people that can assist on the ground, it's amazing. It's actually, it's coming to fruition as we speak. We are evolving daily, and it's a beautiful thing to be a part of because it's such a good thing. You know, everything about Code of Vets, it's, you know, it's wholesome, it's good. It's about taking care of American heroes.
How did you choose the name?
You know what? I'm a strong woman of faith, and I have told everyone God gave me that name. I was praying for something to do. My kids are grown. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and my dad had been on my heart and mind at the same time, which I don't think that was a coincidence. And I was driving home from work one day, and I just felt God's presence in the car with me, and it was incredibly powerful, very strong, and I started crying. And he spoke to my heart.
I'm crying. You're telling me this.
Yeah. He said, Gretchen, you're going to be a voice. You're going to be a voice. And I didn't know. And that's all he told me. And several weeks later, probably 3 or 4 weeks later, I was sitting here at home, and Code of Vets literally just popped into my head and heart immediately. And, you know, I had, you know, again, my dad had been on my heart and mind, and I was like, okay, Lord. I knew it was from him, Code of Vets.
It just came to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just was just a beautiful moment. I was just sitting here thinking about it, you know, that he had told me I was going to be a voice. And then that's when it came to my heart.
Wow.
Code of Vets. And I'm going to start it out by sharing my dad's journey and how it impacted me as a daughter from my perspective, how it impacted our family. And Ray, from day one, it resonated with veterans, and they started coming to me, and they were drawn on to Code of Vets, and it's just exploded in growth ever since. It's a God thing.
How can the listeners, and, you know, we'll be getting eventually this out to a podcast, and it'll get on networks all throughout the podcast world. How can an individual donate to your organization?
Well, at CodeOfVets.com, there's a donation link. You can donate there. You can find us at, you know, on Twitter at CodeOfVets, and the donation link is also on my profile page for CodeOfVets. So just find us either place on Facebook. We're, you know, CodeOfVets on Facebook, and I believe it's there as well on the side. And if you scroll down, you'll see the CodeOfVets PayPal link. And we are currently working on a merchant account through Heartland Payment Services.
Okay.
That's going to be a beautiful thing that's what the business donors are waiting on. So that should be happening any day now. But in the meantime, there is a donate link button on CodeOfVets.com. So please consider giving 100%. Of the funds go to the veterans. I do not keep any of it. I do it to honor my dad.
Wow, that is amazing. And we'll help, you know, move it around. So right now you're sort of stuck between, call it, accounting and legal issues to get this thing launched into a 501c3 trust, which may solve some of the big donor problems.
Yes, right. Yeah, and it takes time to grow into that. And we're doing it legally. We're doing it properly. I'm not speeding through it. I want to make sure that, you know, everything is done correctly because that's how I run my life. I follow the rules. You know, I'm a woman of law and order. So I'm definitely doing this the right way. And it's, you know, I could hurry up and try to, you know, speed through it all and get everything up and functioning, but I want it to look professional. I want it to be professional, and I want it to be solid. I want us to have a solid foundation as we grow. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's how Code of Vets has grown, is that it's just, evolved on its own, and it has a life of its own, and it's, and I'm following it because God is leading the charge. He has opened every door for Coda Vets. I have not had to beg for anything. You know, he has literally opened doors and put people in my path at certain times that have allowed Coda Vets to take that next step. And that's what I'm following his guidance through this. And I think that's why Coda Vets also has got such a good reputation. Why we are continually growing, and the potential is unlimited, is because God's in it.
How else can we help? Do you look for volunteers? Because it seems like an awful heavy load on your shoulders, Gretchen.
It is. At times, it is incredibly overwhelming. Really, I think the most powerful thing, even beyond the dollars, is reposting the information on the different social media platforms.
Okay.
I'm just asking the followers or the listeners, when you see Coda Vets information or regarding veterans issues, crisis, or needs, please share it. That's the key to the success of the more people that see the information, the more possible donors we have, the more solutions we have that for that particular need. And it's just, you know, again, we've been able to solve some really complex issues in the lives of these veterans. And the key is teamwork in sharing, getting that information out in social media as deeply and as wide as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, in wrapping up, I just want to say a few words of thanks. It's not easy what you do. I mean, if it were easy, this would be solved decades ago, right?
Exactly.
So there needs to be, while you are building, there needs to be pressure put on government to help. There could be resources allocated. Gretchen, you're just a remarkable woman. We're so proud of you out here. We love you, really. We truly, honestly, God, we love you and what you're doing.
Thank you, Ray.
It's an honor. We don't have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time in our lives. That's why I write. You've seen some of my stuff.
Yes.
I write books.
Yes.
I write poems. I feel that the clock is ticking, and whatever we can do while we're here, as we're here, seeing problems that are here, we can make a big impact. And that's what it's about. It's about having a voice and making an impact so that at the end of the day, you know, it's a lot more than money in the bank or a beautiful home or a beautiful car, isn't it? It's about
Absolutely.
Having dignity. Honoring the people that served us, that fought for us. And on that note, I just want to thank you and say, love Ray Ray and a poem.